Om Agyana Timurandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chaksur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamaya Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Parakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagarjatam Sahagana Raganatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Purjana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shiva Sakam Vitamscha Hey Krishna, Karna, Sindho, Dinabandho, Dugatpite, Kopesha, Kopika, Kanta, Radha, Kanta, Namostute, Tapta, Kanchana, Gorangi, Radhe, Vrindavaneshwari, Prishyamana, Sute, Devi, Pranamami, Ribriye, Vanchakapa, Trivyastra, Kripa, Sinu, Vriye, Vacha, Patitanam Bhavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Pranitananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudeva Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 1 Chapter 15 The Pandavas Retired Timely Text Number 43 Can anyone see that? Can you all see it? Can you see it back there? Okay. What's that? What's this? This? Okay. Is that better?
Yeah.
It's probably worse for him. Unless he can see through the side of the board. Okay, and you know, not everyone will be satisfied. Chiravasa niraharo Bhadavang mukta murdaja Darshayan yatmano rupam Jadon mata pisachava Anavyakshama Anavekshamano nirgara iniragad Ashrinvan badiroyata Chiravasa niraharo Bhadavang mukta murdaja Darshayan yatmano rupam Jadon mata pisachava Anavekshamano niraga Ashrinvan badiroyata
Chiravasa niraharo
Bhadavang mukta murdaja
Darshayan atmano rupam
Darshayan atmano
rupam
Tano mata visachava
Ashrinvan badiroyata
Chiravasa Darshayan began to show Atmanaha of himself, Rupam, bodily features, Jada, inert, Unmata, mad, Pishachavat, just like an urchin. I think Pisacha is like it's a ghost, isn't it? I guess urchins are usually... Urchin is like a little child who's like... has no one's caring for him. But this is like a ghost. So I guess it's little... What's that?
It's like loitering around.
Yeah. Anavek Shamana. Without waiting for. Niragat was situated. Ashrinvan, without hearing. Badira, like a deaf man. Yata, as if. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. After that, Marajudasi dressed himself in torn clothing, gave up all solid foods, voluntarily became dumb, and let his hair hang loose. All this combined to make him look like an urchin or madman with no occupation. He did not depend on his brothers for anything else, and just like a deaf man, he heard nothing. Whoever makes the garlands, if you take off, who makes the garlands here? Because if you leave this on, it's just like it pierces right into your shoulders. So it must be piercing into Prabhupada's shoulders. It's like a small sword. Is it? So if you believe Prabhupada is there in his deity form, it means that be a little careful that we don't torture him the whole day. After that, After that, Maharaj used to dress himself in torn clothing, gave up eating all solid foods, voluntarily became dumb, and let his hair hang loose. All this combined to make him look like an urchin or madman with no occupation. He did not depend on his brothers for anything, and just like a deaf man, he heard nothing. Please repeat. After that, Maharaj Yudhisthira dressed himself in torn clothing. Gave up eating all solid foods. Voluntarily became dumb. And let his hair hang loose. All of this combined to make him look like an urchin or madman with no occupation. He did not depend on his brothers for anything. And just like a deaf man, he heard nothing. Purport. Thus, being freed from all external affairs, he had nothing to do with imperial life or family prestige. And for all practical purposes, he posed himself exactly like an inert, mad urchin. He did not speak of material affairs. He had no dependence on his brothers, who had all along been helping him. This state of complete independence from everything is called the purified state of fearlessness. Namo Vishnu Vraya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutai Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swamite Namane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Jindivari Paskya Dhyade Siddharane. The state of fearlessness means that one is no longer misidentified oneself with the material, gross or subtle body. As long as we have material designations, as long as we think we're connected to this body, then we'll be fearful. Bhayam dvitiya bini veshatasya isharabhatasya vipariyo smriti. That one is fearful in the material world because they have a different interest other than Krishna's interest. In the state of surrender, there is one stage called that one has no interest besides Krishna as instrument, shema. Anakulyasya sankalpe, pratikulyasya varjanam, rakshisyatiti vishvaso, koprive varnam tata. Rakshisyatiti vishvaso, atma nikshepa, nikshepa. Sankalpe. Now one has no interest besides Krishna's interest. And then one is always very humble. Humble means that we actually realize that how great Krishna is. No, one cannot become really humble unless there's a real reason to be humble. As long as we misidentify ourselves with this body and we're not aware of who God is, then we think we're possibly a competitor. We're a god in training. And although even one who has a material spiritual concept of life can imagine that it may take a few hundred lifetimes to become God, but since we've been here since time immemorial patiently trying to become God, it's almost like the story of Sisyphus. You know the story of Sisyphus? Yeah, Sisyphus was in, I think it's Greek. Yeah. He was condemned by the gods to be in a hole. And he, in the hole was a very strong rock. And for some reason or another, he had to push the rock out of the hole. So as soon as he spent his whole time pushing this very heavy rock up the hole, until it was almost out of the hole, then it fell back again. And eternally he's been engaged in doing that. So that's called frustration. But never give up. Similarly, all the living entities in the material world, by nature, they're frustrated. They'd be completely, we're already mad, but we'd become completely stock raving mad. If we actually knew all the different lifetimes we had and all the attempts we had and our God project, how they failed. It would be quite discouraging. Luckily, the material world means forgetfulness. Everyone is forgetful. We can't remember what we did yesterday, just like a dog. The dog comes to the dinner table, and the master to eat, trying to get something from the table to eat, and the master takes a newspaper and goes, whack! And the dog goes, whack! And it runs away. 5 minutes later, the dog forgets what happened in the past. And it's back at the table, and the master has the newspaper ready, and whack! And this goes on for some time. So this is called forgetfulness. And why do we forget? Because the material world is a changing place. And it is the nature of the material attachment when we have material designations that, according to the designation I have, I think I'm the proprietor of so many things. If I think I'm this body, then naturally I think this is my dhoti. If someone tries to take my dhoti, then there's dhoti, then there's a fight. Of course, if someone tries to take my dhoti, there might be a fight even if I was self-realized, because it's Krishna's dhoti. And depending on what they want to take the dhoti, but anyhow, it would be very embarrassing, especially during class, to try and test my detachment. In any case, there's a question of Krishna's service also. Even if I don't identify myself as the proprietor of something like this dhoti, still we understand it's Krishna's dhoti, and it's meant for a certain purpose. But to think it's my dhoti, because it's my because I am the body, or it's my body, even I think, well, I'm a spiritual soul, but I'm a spiritual soul who by his prowess has acquired a material body. Just like in the fight on the ocean of milk between the demons and the demigods, then the people were so enthusiastic who were fighting that even their heads were cut off during the fight. They picked up, in the form of a ghost, they picked up their dead bodies and they continued the fight. So that's called enthusiasm. Even we think ourselves as a soul, then I think I'm a soul, but this is my body. Because I don't see Krishna, he doesn't seem to be around, so in the absence of Krishna, I have to take charge. I have to do this, I have to do that. Because otherwise things will fall apart, either in my life or in other people's lives. The reality is that Krishna is always with us. He never leaves us, he's never left us, and he never will leave us, because in the material world we can't do anything without Krishna, because we're not doing anything. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashaha ahankara vimudatma kartaham iti manite. The bewildered soul, under the influence of the three modes, thinks himself to be the doer of activities which are actually carried out by the modes of material nature. So although I may think, you know, here I am, I'm moving my hands, but actually Krishna told me to move the hands. Now I can't blame it on Krishna. If I do something, you know, I go up to someone, I slap in the face, and they say, why did you do that? I didn't do it, Krishna did it. No, if we're engaged, it is not, Krishna is not the only factor. Although he's the ultimate factor, I couldn't slap someone in the face unless Krishna allowed me to do it. And of course, I may desire to slap someone in the face. And of course, even my desires are not even independent, because the desire arises due to my past activities. If the only desire in my mind was to give the person a rose, it would be very hard to slap them in the face, because the only desire that I know of, that I'm aware of, is to give them a rose. But due to my past activities, therefore this desire is arising in my heart, and I may agree to the desire and go up and really will, yes, Krishna, go for it. Or I may say, this is ridiculous. And the desire comes and something else will come. Don't worry. If we give up one desire, we're not going to sit there desirelessness, you know, twiddling our thumbs. Because even that's a desire. As soon as we become aloof from one desire, that material nature will give us another desire. Don't slap in the face, shoot him. Or if we're in Krishna consciousness, then we have the opportunity to substitute that desire for a higher desire. Or even if we're not in Krishna consciousness, there are so many possibilities. We may become aloof from that desire, and another desire may come in the mode of goodness to substitute. Give them a book or something, or tell them, oh, that's transcendental. But be cooperative, for instance. This is not a very good desire. So this realm of desires entering into our minds is practically, from the material point of view, we got the three modes and unlimited combinations from the three modes. And on the spiritual, we have knowledge coming down through Krishna, through his pure devotees. Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Actually, the knowledge is directly coming from Krishna through Shastra, but Shastra also means coming from his devotees. And then we have Guru and Sadhu in this succession, but they all connect together in one point. And what's that point? It's called the Super Soul. It is not that Guru says one thing, Sadhu says something else, Shastra says something else, and Krishna is sitting, you know, in our heart, completely confused. What's going on? Krishna is not schizophrenic. You know, kind of bewildered. Oh my God, so many possibilities. Just flip a coin. Do whatever you want. You take your seat to Takuru. They say in Bhagavad Gita. Now I've explained everything. I don't even know what to do. Do whatever you want. Just get out of here. Don't bother me. No, Krishna knows exactly what to do, and he's trying to convey it. He's conveyed it through Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. And he knows exactly at every moment exactly what he wants us to do with this body, what he wants us to say, what he wants us to think, how he wants us to feel. That may seem rather mechanical, but he knows exactly how to act perfectly in terms of time, place, and audience. Krishna is expert. That's one of his qualities. He's daksha. It's a question of our becoming Krishna conscious and then inquiring from Krishna what we can do with his body. That doesn't negate the independence of the soul, his personality. Right now, we're not even aware of what our person. We don't even know who we are. What to speak, you know, if we're worried, I'm going to negate my personality. I'm going to negate my material personality, yes. My lower personality, which is not me either. It's just the modes of material nature. And all I'm going to do is act according to the conception that I'm actually Krishna's servant. And that automatically is the highest personality I can possibly manifest. If I'm attached to the lower nature, my lower personality, if I think it's, you know, lust, anger, and greed, that's the way to go, then I won't be very much interested in figuring out what Krishna wants me to do, because it'll interfere with what I think is my natural free personality. The problem is we have to get another natural free personality in the next lifetime, and until we finally agree to act according to Krishna's direction. Of course, if we're striving to understand what Krishna wants us to do, he's not trying to hide it from us. It's not like we have to become Sherlock Holmes, take a course and an investigation to discover what Krishna wants us to do. No, the first thing he wants us to do is become humble. Because he says that, how do I know that? I talked to him last night in my dream. No, you know I didn't talk to him in my dream. No, because Krishna says, Amadi Vam Adam Vivam Ahimsa Shanti Arjavam. The first process, this first quality necessary to get knowledge is humility. And what is that humility? The humility is I actually don't know what's to be done. Without the help of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, I don't know. A servant doesn't know what's to be done. Someone who's not thinks he's not a servant, he may think he knows exactly what's to be done because his mind will tell him. So that's, in the material world, that seems to be natural. I just sit, I'm just there, my mind's telling me exactly what to do, or my senses. But a servant of Krishna, he has to think, what does Krishna want me to do? That I have no independence other than Krishna. And right now I may not know clearly because I'm in Maya. I'm covered by the modes of material nature. Therefore I have to become thoughtful. Thoughtful doesn't mean sit there and just, you know, get deeper and deeper and deeper into my mind. What do I want? Who am I? What am I doing here? How to become happy? So that's also not bad in one sense. That way it's philosophical. But deeper and deeper into try to see things. Try to get clear vision. What is actually going on in this world? Is everyone actually a spiritual soul situated in a body? Am I looking at bodies, or am I also remembering that there is a soul and there's a super soul and everyone belongs to Krishna? That oneness of vision. Then, what does Krishna want me to do in this vision? There is not only souls and the super soul and bodies, but there's also differentiation. There's women, there's men, there's cats, and there's dogs. Not that I see everyone as one. So, some impersonalists, they say like that. And therefore, whether you embrace a brahmachari or a woman or a tiger, it's all the same. It makes no difference. It's all one. How can I contaminate my oneness of vision with discrimination? So therefore, sometimes they think the devotees are just sentimentalists. And often they are. And then sometimes they think, oh, this devotee, he's not so sentimental. He's just a dry discriminator. He just breaks everything down and analyzes it and takes the juice out of all of it. So there's no love anymore. So the background is knowledge and detachment. If we actually want love and we want proper consciousness, then the background has to be knowledge and discriminate and detachment. But not spiritual knowledge. It's not just ordinary knowledge that you get by reading the newspapers or taking a course at a university, but knowledge of actually what reality is and how it all fits together, not only breaking it down, but assimilating it also. So that ultimately, I really see how to serve Krishna in every circumstance appropriately. Not only from the spiritual point of view, but expertly, according to the different time, place, and audiences I'm faced with. So that ultimately I'm inspiring them to become Krishna conscious, to make some progress in the science of Krishna consciousness. So humility is good. It's certainly the beginning. We should feel a little humble because we're knowing that we're a spiritual soul and we're in Maya and we're being beaten by the three modes of material nature, etc., etc. After a while, then I really feel humble and depressed too. But we also need discrimination, transcendental discrimination expertise. How to serve Krishna expertly according to time, place, and circumstance so we actually become inspired to achieve the goal of life, namely feeling separation from Krishna. In order to achieve that, at the beginning is a little amadivam and then adambivam, free from false prestige, from illusion and false prestige. So the main illusion is this identification with the body. And along with the body come so many qualities, and everyone has their special qualities. And everyone thinks their special qualities are quite special. Special qualities, someone's intelligent, someone is more attractive, Someone has a more friendly, someone has this quality, that quality. And it's very easy for ourselves to actually think this is me. Or this may not be me, theoretically, but I acquired these things because I'm such a good soul. I'm a specially good soul, and therefore I've gotten specially good karma. And maybe it's not me, maybe it's not whatever, but now I have this, I might as well enjoy it. That's called Taranga Rangini, enjoying the small waves of devotion. We realize actually I'm not the body, I'm a spiritual soul, but I should enjoy this nice situation I'm under. So that's called Maya. It's a nice Maya, and all the devotees will appreciate our Maya, because they're also in Maya. And some devotees wish they were in that kind of Maya. They think that kind of Maya is superior to the Maya they're under. But it's just another phase of illusion. That actually, instead, therefore, Krishna says, Dukeshu vamanagmanaksu keshu vigatab spriha vitaraga vayakroda sikadiramuna uchite. One who's not disturbed in spite of the threefold miseries, who's not elated when there is happiness, and is free from attachment, fear, and anger, is known as a sage of steady mind. It's easy to be humble when you're being afflicted by misery all the time. Or humbler, actually. Humility is, it's easier, hopefully, to take shelter of Krishna when we're having problems. Too many problems, of course, then we curse Krishna instead of taking shelter of him. But a little bit of problems, then naturally we want to take shelter of Krishna a little bit. Especially we have some confidence that he can help. Because it doesn't seem like anyone else can, so alright, let me try him. On the other hand, we find Maharaj Yudhisthira and other devotees in Srimad Bhagavatam. They are relatively very happy life. If someone was the emperor of the world, or nowadays if you're a multi-billionaire, then what is your problem? Of course, multi-billionaires, they have so many problems. But relatively speaking, many of your problems, like what you're going to eat today, whether you're going to have any clean clothes, where are you going to sleep? Those aren't the problems. If one is the emperor, then relatively speaking, there is less problems from that point of view. There is what we could consider happiness, because you can, more or less, you have the ability to get free from all your problems by your wealth, by your power, by whatever else is available to you. But that's not good, because if we're too happy and complacent, then we won't be determined to serve Krishna. We're trying to develop this anxiety, just like Caitanya Mahaprabhu had this anxiety to be in Vrindavan. So much anxiety that when he saw an ordinary sand dune, he thought it was Govardhan Hill and ran towards it at the speed of the mind. Such enthusiasm to get there. So that is what we're looking for, that intensity of enthusiasm in Krishna consciousness. Activities performed in Krishna consciousness with intelligence is called enthusiasm. So that kind of experience, that kind of mental consciousness, that's what we're actually trying to achieve. If there is too much, everything's going too well for us, we just become complacent. Because that's Kali Yuga, you know. If there is nice prasadam, there's a place to sleep, I did my service, then I'm a good person and I can relax a little bit. You know, Krishna, oh, he may be somewhere, but thanks a lot, Krishna. Yeah. See you tomorrow. And if there's too much misery, then usually we become too disturbed. But one who's actually very elevated, in spite of whatever misery, like Prahlad Maharaj, he was facing, he didn't forget Krishna. And Yudhisthira Maharaj, in spite of all his opulence, he didn't forget Krishna. But to show the example that he could be as Krishna conscious in his situation as a king, or as Krishna conscious in this situation as a mendicant with nothing on the road, he manifested that pastime. Just like the opposite of that was Sudama Vipra. He had nothing. He was fully Krishna conscious. He didn't care whether he ate. He didn't care about anything. He only cared about Krishna. But when he, after coming from Dwarka, then he was given opulence by Krishna greater than that of the King of Heaven. And it was a shock to him. He didn't know what to do with it. But finally he decided he'd utilize it all for Krishna. So sometimes it happens. We become so detached, so convinced that we don't need anything. But the real test is when we get everything, what are we going to do with it? One devotee in Los Angeles, this is like 30 years ago, he inherited $25 million. At that time, it was a lot more money than it is now. So he went to get his money, and then he sent back his beads, he sent back his jodis, he sent back his books, he sent back everything, and said, I don't need these things anymore. So we may think, well, that's, you know, he was in Maya. But then again, Krishna's not testing us in that way either. So we can be more or less convinced that I'm actually a good devotee. I wouldn't do anything like that. But one has to be, this is a test for someone like Yudhisthira Maharaj. He's going from opulence to poverty, and sometimes people go from poverty to opulence, and it's a test in any case. And maybe we're not in poverty right now, and maybe we don't have unlimited opulence, but every day is a test. What are we actually utilizing in Krishna's service? How much, when we enter into whatever space we have, are we actually seeing as Krishna's space? Am I actually seeing this body as Krishna's body? Am I seeing my activities as actions of devotion, in devotional consciousness? And of course, we have so many other things, even in spiritual life, that are a little tricky, you know, we make things more complicated. What does Krishna really want me to do? Especially in ISKCON, we've developed this parallel, what we, I'm on this, called this Parallel Lines of Authority Committee. So sometimes that becomes confusing too, that my temple president wants me to do something, but my initiating guru told me to do something, and I read in the book something completely different. So what to do? Do nothing. So that takes quite a bit of intelligence. It's not that guru said one thing, my initiating guru, or my shiksha guru said something else, people I heard from, the book says something, prophet says something else, the authorities say something else, and multiple authorities. But it's not that Krishna has become confused. Krishna knows exactly what he wants us to do and how he wants us to do it. So if we pray to Krishna in a humble state of mind, try to assimilate all the different factors, including the authorities, try to put everything in perspective, then Krishna will give us intelligence, some kind of intelligence, at least better intelligence we would have had if we didn't become thoughtful. And if we still don't know what to do, then we have to inquire. That's our development of Krishna consciousness, is the development of a service attitude. And the development of a service attitude means that until things are clear, exactly what Krishna wants me to do, then I don't do it. Guru, sadhu, shastra, everyone. They're meant to help me become clear what Krishna wants me to do. They're not there for any other reason. So if there seems to be some conflict between them, then I have to personally resolve it before I do anything. And if it's when it's resolved, then I can do things with full consciousness, full clarity of clarity that this is what Krishna wants me to do. And if I, on top of that, I do it to please him, then the result is I'll think about Krishna. And that's my perfection in Krishna consciousness. Not the result, not even whether everyone was satisfied with what I did. But what's the result is I'm actually thinking about Krishna in devotion. Not that I'm acting to dissatisfy people, I'm acting actually because as Krishna's servant, my aim of life is to serve by serving Krishna to benefit everyone. But Prabhupada gives the example that on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Arjuna was fighting on behalf of Krishna, and he was killing people. Krishna told him to kill many, many people. It's in this verse in Bhagavad Gita where it says, what does it say? Yeah, that's not right. Jitendriya, we start with Jitendriya. Yoga yukta vishudatma, see there is a super soul. Yoga yukta vishudatma vijitatma jitendriya sarabhutatma bhutatma koravanatmi lilipyate. One who works in devotion, who is a pure soul, who controls his mind and senses, is dear to everyone, and everyone is dear to him. Though always working, such a person is never entangled. So is Arjuna dear to everyone on the battlefield of Kurukshetra? Oh, this arrow that enters my heart. It's a gift from Arjuna. So sweet. No, Arjuna was dear in the sense he was only acting for Krishna. And by acting for Krishna, he was actually benefiting everyone, including those little sweet arrows that entered into people's hearts and took off their heads. Because they attained some kind of higher state of consciousness, a higher realm of existence. Either they went to the sun planet, or they went back to the spiritual world, or something like that. Everyone was benefited. If we become fixed in what actually Krishna wants us to do, and we do it, then the result is we'll actually act for everyone's benefit. And if there is a conflict between our authorities, between our conception, there may not even be a conflict between the authorities, we may create a conflict within our mind between the authorities. My initiating guru told me this, but my temple president did this. And we invent this fight within our minds between them. Go get him! Whoever wins, I'll serve. All right. No, that's not real. It's probably not even real. It's mostly within our minds. But we have to resolve it, what seems to be a conflict within the mind. We can't be munda, lazy. Oh, it's too much trouble to figure out. And there's too many instructions, and there's too much philosophy, and I'm in Maya and lazy, and I don't want to go through it, and who cares? Is there any prasadam? No, we can't be spiritually lazy. If we want to make spiritual progress, we have to resolve these things, and then we'll actually understand the technique of advancing in spiritual life. And actually becoming a servant of Krishna, and through him the servant of all the devotees, properly. So of course, luckily we have our final authority within ISKCON. We have Prabhupada's instructions in his books. Everyone is supposed to resolve their differences by Prabhupada's instructions, especially in his books. Not only his verbal instructions and his example, etc., but Prabhupada said he gave us everything in these books. So if there actually is some difference between the senior devotees who are giving instructions, and they have to resolve it through Prabhupada's instructions. And in lieu of that, they're supposed to cooperate. Even if we can't resolve every difference philosophical point, but at least we just set aside our difference and we cooperate to spread the Sankirtan movement. And by doing that, eventually Krishna will give us higher intelligence so that there won't be any more conflict. Conflict, not difference. Difference is there even in the spiritual world. Mother Jasoda sees Krishna as a little child, even in the spiritual world. And the gopis see him as a lover. So there's a conflict, because the gopis can embrace Krishna in front of Mother Jasoda, because to Mother Jasoda he's still a little child. It would be inappropriate. Conjugal and Matsalya are incompatible rasas. So there seems to be a conflict, but it's all rasa, it's all taste, and it's all resolved in another kinds of rasas and tastes. There seems to be a conflict, but there's no material conflict. It just produces other types of spiritual transcendental pleasures. So the gopis are bathing Krishna in the spiritual world, and Krishna is is going, and Mother Jasoda is running out, saying, "What are you doing to my Krishna?" Well, you know. So Krishna is creating even sometimes these things so that the gopis become very embarrassed. So they're manifesting their feelings towards Krishna in a certain way, and then Mother Jasoda, and then Krishna is creating the scene where Mother Jasoda's parental love seems to be interfering with it. But there's no real interference. It's just another kind of rasa. And everyone appreciates it. But here we actually have real conflict sometimes. I'm the boss. No, I'm the boss. Well, let's see who's the boss. Actually, we're all servants. And ultimately we have to resolve if there's a conflict between the servants. We have to find out who the real master is. In our movement, the ultimate master is Prabhupada. And Prabhupada's not gone. He's still here. He's here in his deity form. He's here in his instructions. And if we agree that he's alive, then Krishna will give us the intelligence, what Prabhupada wants us to do as the super soul. Because the super soul is in contact with Prabhupada. Prabhupada is in contact with the super soul. And if we're in contact with the super soul, we'll also be in contact with Prabhupada. All right, I'll stop there. Any questions? Comments? All right, so I guess everyone agrees. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Premanande.